Chapter 9, From Spiritual Death to Rebirth. When I was in junior high school, I really liked chemistry. On the other hand, I was a terrible chemistry student. My teacher had no place in her thinking for someone who was a terrible student but really liked chemistry anyway. In her mind, there was either good chemistry student or bad chemistry student, and she let me know which one I was. Pow! Any belief in myself as a science student died right there. A parent told you you would never be pretty, and any belief in your beauty died right there. Someone told you that you were dumb and would never amount to anything, and your self-confidence died right there. Someone told you that you had no talent, would never be able to play in an orchestra, and your belief in your musical ability died right there. For most of us, there's not a tomb big enough to hold the bones of the parts of ourselves that died along the way. The you that has been invalidated, put down, suppressed, violated, hurt, endangered, smeared, humiliated, mocked, brutalized, abandoned, lied about, stolen from. On and on goes the list of ego delight. Such is your crucified self. The crucifixion is not specifically a Christian concept. Metaphysically, it is a pattern of energy, demonstrated physically in the life of Jesus, but experienced psychically in the life of everyone. Energetically, it symbolizes a pattern of thought. Death is its mission, and life is its enemy, for it is the mind at work against God. Thus, the drama of every human life, as love is born into the world and then crucified by fear. But the story does not stop there. Resurrection, like crucifixion, is a metaphysical truth. It is God's response to the ego, or the ultimate triumph of love. All that is ever going on in any situation is that love appears, love is crucified, and ultimately love holds sway. One night I was watching the movie Dances with Wolves on television with my daughter. Both of us were deeply moved by the lives of the Sioux Indians, their harmony with nature and spirit, the way they allowed the ways of true essential being to order their lives and bless their world. They treated life itself as a sacred treasure. Yet the collective ego of the Western world tried to destroy and ultimately succeeded in destroying their civilization of that time. Such are the tragedies of human history. There is a dark force, not outside us, but within us, always at work to destroy the love that God creates. That force, or ego, is held in place by our belief that we are separate from God and from each other. It expresses itself constantly through judgment and blame. It is every unkind word, attack thought, or violent action. Sometimes it whispers, as in a mean glance. Sometimes it shouts, as in the genocide of a people. But it is always active, as long as it has fear to fuel it. And today, it has its eye on the biggest prize of all, the prospect of global annihilation. Crucifixion takes many forms, material, mental, emotional, and spiritual. Mentally, it is a progressive disease at work within all our minds. It is sometimes called the second force, the Antichrist, the devil. It is the destructive anti-life element in the human experience. The resurrection is God's answer to the crucifixion. It is his uplifting of our consciousness to the point where the effects of fear are canceled. Our holiness, God's love within us, is the only way humanity has ever transcended darkness, and it is the only way we ever will. Jesus wept, says the Bible, as we all do, challenged in our various ways by the lies and projections of the ego. Jesus' crucifixion, the torture and murder of an innocent man, is a radical teaching example, a demonstration of the strength of fear and then the power of love to overcome it. Jesus died, then lay in his tomb for 3 days, and for that period of time, of course, it seemed to those who loved him as though all hope were lost. Yet hope is of God, and what is of God is never lost. Jesus transcended the crucifixion by taking it on, as it were. Confronted with the murderous projections of others, he continued to love with an open heart. and by allowing his heart to be as big as the universe, he became a vortex of the miraculous. Just as in the presence of Moses, the laws of time and space were suspended in the parting of the Red Sea, in the presence of Jesus, the laws of death were suspended as well. What did Jesus have that we don't have? Nothing. The issue is not that he had something we don't have, but that he didn't have anything else. His love of God had cast out all else. Collective darkness. Today, our personal crucifixions are particularly intense as we take on the individual pieces of a huge and cosmic darkness. It's a universal pattern that the darkness seeks to destroy the light, and no one ever said, except in your case. And the darkness is most intense when it senses encroachment by the light. If you're doing good things and extending loving energies, the second force is on its way to you, but that doesn't mean it's about you. In today's world, to truly make a stand for holiness, for universal love, is in most situations so far from the status quo that you have to decide how much you're willing to compromise your heart in order to get along. The world as we know it is dominated by fear, and some of our major institutions are its unwitting headquarters. Think this way, don't think that way. Go in this direction, not in that one. Yet the spirit isn't known for conformity. Where there's no room for the ecstatic impulse, there is no real room for the revelation of love. If you can rise above the fear in your life and live the love within you, and if I can rise above my fear and live the love in me, if that drama is reenacted enough times by enough of the world's people, then we will pierce the cosmic darkness and tip the world in the direction of light. Every one of us counts. There is no such thing as a neutral thought. Every perception leads to more fear or love for us and the world around us. With every prayer, every act of kindness, and every thought of forgiveness, we are building a wave of love that will turn back all fear. But we cannot take on the fear of the world until first we've taken it on within ourselves, and that we cannot do alone. We can't heal ourselves of a deep neurosis simply by intellectually deciding to change. Many of us have tried and failed. God can do for us, however, what we can't do for ourselves. When His Spirit comes upon us, fear is silenced. It is nullified. It is gone. Once we have embraced the fullness of our spirit, then the effects of our former brokenness disappear. From physical disorders to painful relationships, from world hunger to world conflict, once we have risen to our divine potential, we become people with the courage and intelligence to cast out all darkness. With God in charge, we rise above the thoughts that keep us bound, and thus the world is changed. We can forego a collective Armageddon if we learn the lessons from our personal ones.